page 1250, James, chapter 3, beginning at verse 13. Heading, Two Kinds of Wisdom. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show it by their good life, by deeds done in humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbour bitter envy and selfish ambition in your heart, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness.
Thanks so much, Freda. Let me pray that God helps me and helps you. Jesus, thank you that you have written to us in the Bible words of wisdom. Open our eyes now to see what you're saying and help us to have soft hearts, humble hearts, which move with you as you direct us. Amen. So you're singing that song. My sense was, to everybody, really, well done for being here. There's so much pressure in life to do so many things, and you've chosen the better thing. To dwell in the house of God, to be with God, that is the best thing you could do. If you had 2 hours on a Sunday morning, this is the best thing you could do. Now this morning, what I want to ask you is, which wall is your ladder leaning up against? Because we've all got a ladder of life leaning up against the wall, and we're either crawling up the ladder, some of us may think we're flying up the ladder, sometimes we might think we're falling down the ladder, fumbling up, but we've got a ladder in life. It starts at birth, ends at death, and it's leaning on one of two walls. Now, and I want to talk about which wall are you investing yourself in, which ladder are you investing in. Hi, Gabby and Carl, they've gone through, they're in the lounge. And we get one life, we're born, then we die, and so we want to think, where are we investing our life? Now, in our society, we're encouraged to think we've got loads of different options. You can be straight, you can be gay, you can be individual or team play, you can be corporate, you can be community, young-minded or old-minded. And so therefore, this society is saying, well, there's loads of different walls, loads of different ladders, you just pick your one. But what society is confusing is how you climb your ladder with the wall that it's leaning against. And Jesus says there's just two walls. In all his stories, he only ever gives you two options. He says you either go by the narrow gate or the broad gate. You're either lost or you're found. You're either wise or you're foolish. You're thirsty or you're slaked. You're hungry or you're satisfied. You're God's friend or his enemy. You're spiritually alive or spiritually dead. Oh, there's only ever two options with Jesus. So your ladder is either on the wall of God or the wall of humanity. Can we have our ladders, please, Steve? You're either climbing towards God, or you're climbing climbing towards a destiny that isn't of God. So you've either got your ladder against God's wall or a human wall. Starts at birth, ends at death. Once you get to the top, you can't go back down. That's it. So this morning we're talking about wisdom. How do you make sure your ladder is against the right wall? You don't want to get to the top and say, blur. I spent X years climbing up the wrong wall. So how do we work that out? Well, this series is titled God's Purposes, God's Power. Jesus said, I came to do the will of him who sent me. So we want to discover, well, what is God's will? And to do that, you need wisdom. Now, wisdom isn't really talked about in our society, is it? We talk about sort of being mindful, we talk about coaching, we talk about being smart, we talk about life options. If you did podcasts on wisdom, you would get very few subscribers. If you did a YouTube channel on wisdom, you'd probably get very few subscribers. So what we think about wisdom is a kind of library, dusty library with old books. But our society is not a very good advert. I can see it, I'm talking about wisdom, and I can see it just about is turned off. You know, it's a wet weekend, wisdom, like, why didn't you put that in the email? You know, I might not have come, that's why I didn't put it in the email. And so, and our society says, well, you know, wisdom. But then there was a Gallup poll recently, the polling organisation, they polled the whole world. And they said the world is more angry and more stressed than ever before. It found globally levels of stress were at a new high, while levels of worry and sadness also increased. Britain currently seems to be in a collective leadership vacuum and lacking in direction to take us forward. We've got problems with anxiety, we've got problems with stress, we've got problems with polarisation. I would say our society, which says wisdom isn't very important, is a bit of an advert for how important wisdom is. Don't you think if we were a little bit wiser, we wouldn't be quite in the muddle we're in? So, because we don't talk much about wisdom, we're going to start with the basics. We need to answer the questions, what is wisdom and how do you get it? I had to do some research this week. And I think, Steve, if we can have the next slide.
It's Christine.
Oh, Christine. Fantastic. Right. Thing and beautiful as well. So wisdom, getting the right things in the right way at the right time with the right resources. The problem is, if you get any bits of that equation wrong, the wisdom doesn't work out. Let me show you what I mean. If we can go back to the previous slide. Thanks, Christine, you're doing beautifully. The ladder that's on the human wall, we said it starts at life, ends at death, is totally reliant on human resources. Because it's deliberately saying, there isn't God, got to sort things out for ourselves. Therefore, that's going to start to challenge that equation of wanting the right things in the right way at the right time with the right resources. And it will start to muddle them up. You see, the first thing that's impacted is the destination. So we've said death's at the top of both of that. Just can't avoid talking about that. Sorry about that, but there we go. That's it. Now, nobody, sane person, saying we don't die. Even the humanist society doesn't believe in God, says, has a video on its website that says, what should we think about death? And, you know, there were a group of people a long, long time ago in the Old Testament, and they, at the start of creation, they were building a tower. They said, look, we're just human beings. Can't see God, he's far away. And so we need to make a name for ourselves. We need to build a tower that stretches up to heaven and we'll make a name for ourselves. And if your ladder is leaned up against a human wall, you are under pressure to make a name for yourself. Because you've got nothing else. So Richard Dawkins, I admire him for facing up to death, and we talk about how many people don't. He says, well, the best thing you can do is you can leave a memorial for your life. You can invest in others, so when you die, things will go on afterwards. And that's a good and a noble thing to do. You know, some people want a statue built, or a book written, or them to be famous. But the problem is, you bring nothing into this world, you take nothing out of it. That's not going to benefit you. That will benefit people, and that's wonderful, but it won't benefit you, because you'll be dead. So, other people, most people think like this. Most people don't think about death. They don't think about the consequences of death, and they spend their life avoiding it. And it's the kind of YOLO thing, isn't it? You only live once. So what you try and do is you try and cram as many good experiences into your life, because that's all you've got. Bucket lists. You may have bucket lists, you know, things you want to do before you kick the bucket. So you're under pressure. So you're under pressure to, if you're on ladders against this wall, to cram your life with good things like possessions, relationships, popularity, fame, recognition, peace, security, clothes, success, life partner, family, money, great holidays. And those things aren't necessarily bad in themselves. What happens is they become bad when they end up as an end of themselves. You remember that equation, right thing, if we can go back to the wisdom equation? What happens is they become wrong things. So they're right things if they're in the right time. They become wrong things because you're under pressure to get them now. They become like little gods in your life. You have to have them. So if you don't have that house or other's house, how do you feel down? If you don't have those lovely clothes, you feel shabbily dressed and ugly. If you don't have great health, you become embittered and angry. And that pressure, they become like little gods, little demons in your life. That pressure starts to make you do things in the wrong way. Slowly, subtly, you move from morally good technique to morally bad technique. You duck and you dive, you twist and turn. You push your children to achieve, perhaps beyond their ability, because you want them to do well. Your family or parents become a drag because they restrict your freedom. You climb over people at work, using them to get ahead. You manipulate and use friends, family, and colleagues. And that's what James talks about in verse 14. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. Where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. And you've got the wrong resources. Well, you've got to do it on your own. If you've done well in life, if you're doing well on the ladder, let's have the ladders again. If you've done well on that, we're putting you through your paces, Christine. This is deliberately designed to make sure you're the real deal, that you're doing well. You've got to use your own resources. If you've done well, you feel great. But if you do badly, you feel bad because it's all your fault. You want to talk to a Manchester United fan at the moment, how they feel. For 20 years, they felt great. Winning the title almost every year. Champions League, FA Cups. Now, they're pretty sick because their arch rivals, Manchester City, are at the top, winning the FA Cup, winning the Premiership, winning the League Cup. That's life. Isn't that life? Isn't your life like that? Isn't my life like that? Sometimes it's great, you feel great, but when it's down, you feel down. Because you're responsible. Because you're always the human wall. And what happens as well is you start blaming. You either do two things when that happens. If you're an honest person, you blame yourself and you take responsibility. Most of us, however, probably blame other people. Do a mixture of the two. It's their fault. If I know I've been given this break, this promotion, if only my children weren't like this, my parents weren't like this, if only I lived in a different place. And we have stress, anxiety, bitterness, anger and rage. And we start blaming God as well. Even though our ladder's against a human wall, we're doing things in a human way to get human ends, God gets it in the neck. God, why aren't you helping me? Where are you? I'm angry with you. In fact, I'm going to punish you by not believing in you. Even though we put the ladder against the human wall. And James says, look, don't pretend if you feel like that. What does he say? I can't find it. Somewhere he says, do not boast about it or deny it. That's right, verse 14. Let's not pretend we're not feeling as we are. Okay, but there's an alternative. So you've got the ladder against God's wall. Bible says to be wise, you must first have reverence for the Lord. If you know the Holy One, you have understanding. Up against a different wall. Doesn't make a slight difference, it makes a huge difference. In the beginning, it doesn't seem to make much difference. Can you see the two ladders are close together? But the further you get up the ladder, the further apart you get. And the more the impact of which wall you are on has an impact. The biggest thing about this ladder is, while it ends in death, Jesus says death isn't the end. It acknowledges that all are appointed to die once, but God promises this will not end in death. Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me, even after dying, will live. And all the quotes, by the way, from the Bible are on those sheets there take them home and follow them through. So this ladder moves from moves from life to death. This ladder effectively moves from death to life. It's kind of reversed in a crazy sort of way. And so that changes everything. So if this life is only the first chapter on a richer, fuller, bigger life, this life's really important. But if it's only the opening chapter on a huge book, each page more marvellous than the one before, suddenly you're free from having to achieve everything in this life like you did on that ladder. Cars, houses, holidays, academic success, travel, health. If you see other people with good things, you don't need to get jealous. Because God neither promised us those things, Jesus didn't have them, nor does he say fulfillment rests in them, like people in this ladder are forced to do. So the power of those little idols, all of those things that everyone on this ladder is chasing for, goes. Every prisoner's chain falls off. They've got no power over you anymore. If you have them, great. If you don't, fine. Said in the Bible, a person of great understanding shows patience. Patience doesn't give you great understanding. Great understanding gives you patience. Because if God didn't even spare his own son but gave him up for us all, won't he give us everything else at the right time and in the right way? So God's not promising on this ladder that you get everything in this life. In our DG group this week, if you're not in a DG group, I encourage you to join one. There's spaces for Steve at the end. Now he's not got a job anymore doing the AV. He needs something to do. So we had a great time. We were talking about there's a man called Paul who was a follower of Jesus, and he was in prison quite often because of that. And he said, well, I'm in chains, but I rejoice. And we were sharing how different people were sharing the difficulties and struggles they were going through. And no one likes those, by the way. We're not sitting there saying, well, you know, that's your struggle, you listen to mine. You know, everyone's got struggles and trials. We don't like them. But people were saying they could see what God was doing to us. Because this life isn't the end. We're free from them. Just as Christ's troubles on the cross led to salvation for all of us. So our earthly troubles, God's working and doing great things. For God works for the good of all those in all things for those who love him. But the most powerful aspect about this ladder, if we can have not the next slide but the one after that, is that it actually looks slightly different. That's actually how that ladder looks. You see, you didn't put the ladder on that wall because you can't. God put the ladder on that wall in the cross of Jesus Christ. Do you remember it said to have wisdom for the Lord, you must first have reverence for the Lord. If you know the Holy One, you have understanding. You can only get to God if you know Jesus, because Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except by me. This ladder is all out down on you. All on your resources, all that you can scrape, beg, borrow. This one, going up the ladder, you don't have to use your resources. Jesus has put the ladder there, and he's helping you climb. You know in the airports when you have those walkways that you walk on, they're like flat escalator, and I always try and not go on the escalator, and I have a like, little race with the people on the escalator. I try to pretend I'm not racing, and it's a little bit uncool, but you're walking just a little bit faster, see, can you beat them on the escalator, because there's quite a lot of people there. But if you're on that escalator, it's going to carry you. You can walk a bit faster if you like, but the escalator's carrying you to your destination. Jesus is carrying you to your destination. He has taken the responsibility for your life. So do you know that? Just like in an organisation, your boss is responsible for your performance. Jesus is responsible for your performance. Do you remember that story last week, the bags of gold? Gives us each a bag of gold. It's up to us to invest it, but he makes it successful. I chose you. I appointed you to go and bear fruit. Jesus says, the one who remains in me and I in him will bear much fruit. Now, of course, with any employer, it's the boss's responsibility to make sure they perform well. It's our responsibility to respond well to good coaching, instruction, advice. In the same way, we remain in Jesus. You can't say, it says, neither can you bear fruit outside if you don't remain in me. But Jesus is growing fruit. You don't grow it. Jesus does. Wow. That's so nice. You don't have to grab anything. You don't have to prove anything. If someone's doing better than you, that's Jesus' business. Pressure is off. Some people ask a few questions though. They'll say, how come some people do so well? Not everyone is corrupt and empty. Well, first is a general grace of God in this world. You can be climbing up that ladder and God's presence is still in this world. And he'll still be helping people. But in actual fact, if you're climbing this ladder without God, people who generally in life do well actually are using God's qualities. So there's a man called Jim Collins, and he produced a book, it's a seminal book for leaders and business leaders. It's called Good to Great. And what he found is the best CEOs of the world's company, what do you think the most common quality they had was? You know, was it intelligence, or thinking ability, or dynamism, or ruthlessness? There's none of those, it was humility. Humility. The top, world's top leaders were the most humble leaders. And I think what can happen, there's some people that they're not necessarily giving their life completely to God, but they're down near the bottom of the ladder in some ways. They can stretch out to both. They're still holding on to a little bit of God and some of God's qualities, and actually it's those qualities that benefit your life. I heard one of the world's leading investors, a man called Prem Watson, who is a Christian. He was saying the common perception of business is the ruthless get really far ahead. He said, actually, the ruthless get quite far ahead for a very short space of time. And then they destroy themselves. So the people who are long-standing demonstrate godly qualities, whether they're Christians or not. But the higher up you go in that ladder, you can't keep holding both rungs. And eventually the strain becomes unbearable. Christians can do the same thing. You can have Christians on this ladder, but you and I are still reaching across for human things. Foolishly. And that's when you feel frustrated and bitter, angry, and cross as a Christian, that can well be because you're on this ladder, but you're trying to reach across for human things. You're looking at people on that ladder. You're not looking ahead. It said, for the joy set before us, before him, Christ endured the suffering of the cross. But you're not looking for the joy before you. You're thinking, you're on this godly ladder, but you're thinking like you're a human ladder. You're trying to carry everything into a human lifetime. Jesus said, that's not the way. That's not the way I did it. And you'll be bitter and frustrated if you do that. You know, it's a sense that Britain, as well as a country, as we pull further and further away from God, we're more and more troubled. People don't always do as well as they seem either. We can look around and we can be deceived. I have the tremendous privilege, and it's a real privilege, of meeting with many people sort of in their senior years in this role. So it's lovely, and I love doing that. But one of the things I've discovered that really surprised me is we have this image of this lovely sort of rosy granny who's really happy in life and smiling away. Can I tell you, in my experience, outside of God, that does not exist. I meet many people in their senior years who are frightened, who are afraid, who are anxious, who are bitter. Now, it's nothing to do with wealth. So I know someone who's a parish nurse in the wealthiest part of this country outside of London. She meets with wealthy clients who exhibit all of those qualities outside of God. Now, people can have great families, they can have great wealth, they can put on a show for them, but when you really talk to them, without God, their lives are empty, bitter, and frustrated. You cannot try and get the benefits of this ladder by climbing that ladder throughout your life. Please don't be deceived. Some people know, my father-in-law is a wealthy man, he's worked hard for, and he mixed some fairly wealthy circles. And the sadness of some of the lives of the people he meets. He loves God. He meets people who've retired, storing up wealth their entire life, and then have a heart attack just a few years after they retired. Or people whose lives people with millionaires. And frustrated, angry, selfish. Please don't be deceived. Let me just, can we have the last slide? But this is what happens when you do live a life with God. This is a lady, Verity knows, so this is called Marjorie. And I think there's some Marjories in our family as well. Marjorie Griffin lived to 104. She's there at 100. She was as radiant at 104. In fact, more radiant at 104 than when she was 24. Because she knew the Lord Jesus Christ. You could go and visit her house. She got a little bit frail in her last few years. And she would encourage you. You were going to cheer her up. You couldn't come away. It was like going, it was like liquid sunshine. There's an article about her in Get Ready. Let me just see if I can read you a few of the things. Marjorie worked in printing until she was 29 when she went to college and took a work in Barnardo's in Kent in London. After the Second World War, she became a deaconess and raised money for the poor and homeless in bombed out London. And she eventually managed to get a job running a hostel for ex-Holloway prison inmates. And her nephew, Jeffrey Brazier, recalls visiting her at a hostel when he was a teenager and saying it was a very tough environment. She once escorted a six-foot man out who was hiding under the bed of one of the inmates there. And he was on no uncertain terms that he was not going to be allowed to stay. She was certainly a woman who would not take any lip. Yet she was strong, yet incredibly gentle. And there are people in your church family here who are like Marjorie. Because why? Because the Spirit of God lived in her. She wasn't storing up everything for this world. So wisdom. Wisdom is essentially putting God first. Getting your ladder on the right wall. Now that said, there's ways within, once we've got our ladder on the right wall, that we can just sharpen up our wisdom. And I just want to do a very, very practical thing about that. On your sheet, you've got a story there. It's quote number 11. And I just want to show you wisdom in action. Now, all of us can be wise with the Spirit of God, yet some of us, we talked about the gifts of the Spirit, some of us are given a particular gift of wisdom. It is a particular gift of God. So I hope you'll forgive me. I just want to very quickly do a story that shapes out what I mean. So there's generally putting on ladders against the right wall. And then there's also how can that wisdom work out? Let me read you the story. This comes from the beginning of the life of the church. Certain people were teaching the believers, unless you are circumcised, I don't need to explain what that means, I hope, according to the custom taught by Moses, you cannot be saved. So people were becoming Christians who weren't Jewish, and the Jewish people were saying, you've got to be circumcised. This brought Paul and Barnabas, who were two of the leading Christians at that time, into sharp dispute and debate with them. So Paul and Barnabas were appointed to go up to Jerusalem to see the apostles and elders about this question. The apostles and elders met. After much discussion, Peter got up and addressed them. Brothers, you know that some time ago God made a choice among you that the Gentiles might hear from my lips the message of the gospel and believe. God showed that he accepted them by giving the Holy Spirit to them, just as he did to us. He did not discriminate between us for them, for he purified their hearts by faith. Now then, why do you try and test God by putting on the necks of the Gentiles a yoke that neither we nor our ancestors have been able to bear? I.e., why are you making them obey all these difficult laws? The whole assembly became silent as they listened to Barnabas and Paul telling about the signs and wonders God had done amongst the Gentiles. So the non-Jewish Christians, God was doing amazing things through them. Why give them all these extra laws to obey that even we couldn't obey as Jews? When they finished, James spoke up. Now, James is the person who wrote that bit of the Bible that we have. He's a stepbrother of Jesus, of course, because of the virgin birth. He's a stepbrother. Brothers, he said, listen to me. Simon has described to us how God first intervened to choose a people for his name from the Gentiles. The words of the prophets are in agreement with this, as it is written, after this I'll return and rebuild David's fallen tent. Its ruins I will reveal, but I will restore it, that the rest of mankind may seek the Lord, even all the Gentiles who bear my name, says the Lord, who does these things, things known from long ago. It is my judgment, therefore, that we should not make it difficult for the Gentiles who have turned to God. Instead, we should write them to them, telling them to abstain from food polluted by idols, from sexual immorality, from the meat of strangled animals, and from blood. For the law of Moses has been preached in every city from the earliest times and is read in the synagogues and every Sabbath. Now you will write them a letter, just ask them to keep some of a minimal number of the laws so we don't upset the Jewish Christians. Everyone knows about those laws because the law of Moses has been taught in every sort of city in the Roman Empire. Then the apostles and elders with the whole church decided to choose some of their own men and send them to Antioch with Paul and Barnabas. So the men were sent off and went down to Antioch, where they gathered the church together and delivered the letter from the apostles. The people read it and were glad for its encouraging message. As they travelled from town to town, they delivered the decisions reached by the apostles and elders in Jerusalem for the people to obey. So the churches were strengthened in faith and grew daily in numbers. So we've talked generally about making sure your ladder's on the right wall, but this is how you move a little bit deeper in wisdom. So you've got a complex issue there. And James says that wisdom, this is verse 17 of the bit in the Bible, I'm sorry we're moving around a little bit. The wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peace makes you sow in peace, reap a harvest of righteousness. So this is a practical lesson. How do you put that type of wisdom in action? I remember reading that thinking, I don't like that. That's hard work. I want to do things that way. I want to get decisions quickly. I don't care whether they're peace-loving. We need to get the job done. That's me. Other people are peace-loving, not worried about the right decision, just want everyone to feel happy. But James mixes everything up. The first thing that James does and the apostles do is they deal with the issue. It is not peace-loving to brush under the carpet something which is causing everyone a problem. That is just going to get... You know what happens, don't you? It gets worse. It's harder to deal with later on than at the start. It is peace-loving to say we're going to grapple this in a wise way. It is cowardly to brush it under the carpet. Okay, that's lesson number one. Second lesson is they talk about it together. It's wise to have a conversation with other people who you can trust. You're going to be more impartial, that's one of the qualities there. You're going to hear a different range of views, so you're considerate of each other's opinions. James then gives you a masterclass of how to use wisdom. He's got the gift of wisdom. So we can all generally be wise of Jesus Christ. But some of us have got a particular gift of wisdom, which is growth and a real resource for the church. So James listens to the evidence. In his own letter, he says you should be slow to speak and quick to listen. And he is. He's slow to speak. So he doesn't speak till right at the end. And he offers a solution in the challenge, which corroborates with Scripture, so it's pure, it's truthful, which is one of his qualities. It's got elements of compromise. We're not going to deny the freedom of being in Jesus. We're not going to make people keep loads of laws. But we know that sort of eating certain foods upsets some people in the church. So we'll do something. He's got humility. He says, my judgment. He's sincere. He doesn't compromise the truth. It's easy to compromise the truth when you're trying to arrive at an issue with lots of people. So a lot of humility here and submission, which again, he says, good qualities. Peter, one of the leading apostles, doesn't say, yes, well, thank you, James, for that. That was my friend James's advice. But actually, what we're going to do is my idea, because I'm the sort of leading apostle. He's submissive, and he submits to what he sees as a good idea. And the result is, everyone benefits. It seemed good to the Holy Spirit and us. You know, often when people with wisdom speak, their sort of suggestions just land. And everyone goes, oh, that's a good idea. And as they travel from town to town, they deliver the decisions reached by the apostles and the elders in Jerusalem for the people to obey. So the churches were strengthened in faith and grew daily in numbers. Okay, so that's just an object lesson in wisdom. And then some things for us to think about. So the most important thing for us to be asking, if you look at that little application section there, again, I'm going to ask you a few questions. These are for you to answer yourself. No one's going to see these. I'm certainly not going to look at them. And the question there is, which wall is your ladder leaning against? And we have the ladder back again this Christian, the very first ladder. Which wall is your ladder leaning against? And the sub-question might be, if it's leaning against a God ladder, are you reaching out to the human ladder? And then the next question is, in what ways could your thinking and behaviour better line up with your letter? And again, I do all these questions myself. I wouldn't dare give you questions, which I'm not doing. And then the third question is there anyone you know with a gift of wisdom in Shinto practice? Could be you. Do people come to you for advice? Do people listen to you when you say things? Does the advice you generally give lead to good outcomes, pure outcomes, peaceful outcomes, helpful outcomes? If it does, it could be you. And if it is you, you need to learn to speak and share. Sometimes people with wisdom could be hiding that bag of gold. They're afraid if they say things, no one will listen. But you've got to be calm, bold, and courageous. If you don't use that bag of gold, the whole church suffers. And if you are using it, it can grow. Everyone benefits. And then as a church, we have to help those people. This needs to be a place where people feel free to fail, free to make mistakes. Someone has a go at making a wise suggestion. We don't go, oh, that's rubbish. That didn't work. You know, just listen to it. If you find you're making lots of suggestions and none of them work, they're not peace-loving. People don't listen over a number. You know, you might conclude, I've got the gift of wisdom. But if you have, you should be using it. And we need to be encouraging and nurturing. So that's what the final one. How are you encouraging people with wisdom to use their gift to benefit others? And if you've got the gift of wisdom, how are you nurturing it? So just myself this week. So sometimes people over time have said that I can be encouraging. That's great. But I want to nurture that gift. So I just bought myself a little book on how to encourage others. I'm just reading that each day. How are you nurturing your gift? How are you developing? Let's be a wise church. And wisdom is not leaving the difficult questions unanswered. That is not wisdom. Wise people are those who grab hold of contentious and complex issues and help others deal with them. That's wisdom. Okay, a lot there this morning. If I was wise, I probably would have kept it shorter, but you know, I've got a lot to learn. So let me pray that God helps us. Jesus, thank you that you have said the beginning of wisdom is to have the reverence for the Lord. To be wise is to know God. Jesus, help us to be wise as individuals and wise as a church. Help us. It's so hard, Jesus. We look around, we look at a ladder on a human wall, and we want those things now. And we put ourselves under pressure. Jesus, I pray that like you will be living in this current world, and yet knowing ultimately that our joy is set before us when we meet with you face to face. And that takes away the pressure. We're able to do the right thing in the right way, right time with the right resources.